Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the DFS Army Bold Calls Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Allen, a.k.a. The Geek, and I'm here with the season-long fantasy football GOAT. Season-long says, what's up, my man?
Ooh, my nipples are hard. I know we're going to be talking tight ends, right?
I feel like you've been waiting for the tight end breakdown since we got started. You've been so patient. Since we got started with these breakdowns, man.
Just gets me excited and tingly. And there's a good reason why, which I'll definitely get into as we progress. But I think that this is a really fun position to talk about, and I'm excited to do it.
Yeah. What is it about the tight end position that gets you so excited, outside of creepy reasons?
So I think tight end determines your entire draft strategy. And I'll tell you what I mean. Basically, there's a tight end that could be drafted in every round. And every time another round passes and another tight end goes off the board, I think you talk yourself into the tight end in the following round. And then you start making reasons why you should draft that one or you should wait. Because there's tight end in the first round drafters. There's tight end in the second and third round drafters. There's the early middle round drafters. And then there's those that punt the position completely and then are really spending a good portion of their fab dollars trying to cycle through them in the season. So there's a lot of different ways, and I think it determines your entire draft strategy, whether you know it or not.
I have seen one tight end going as high as seventh or eighth in the first round of high dollar season long drafts already this season, which is crazy. And
I don't think it's that crazy. Think about where Pete Gronk was going.
End of the first round. I mean, did even Pete Gronk, was that ever a, you know, seventh overall pick situation?
Well, the reason Pete Gronk never worked out was because of the games missed. Pete Gronk would literally get hurt and give you 11 games when you needed at least. But when he was on the field, You got your three touchdown game and you got talked into it the following year. I think people caught on, but as we start looking at the tight ends that catch 90 plus receptions and still have double digit touchdown upside, it starts making sense because those elite tight ends are like getting the seventh or 11th best receiver on the board. And at a position that's so scarce, literally falls off the cliff quicker than any other position, it really can give you a substantial advantage if you pick the right one.
I totally agree. And I think more than all other positions, the top end of the tight end grouping, there's such a difference in the actual expected production from the top three guys as compared to all others, that There truly is like a significant drop off here to the point where it does make sense to pay up. And let's mention who these guys are and why. All right, let's get right into it. So I'm looking at ADP data and rather than getting into specific rankings, Travis Kelce is clearing away the top tight end option on the board this season.
There is, and for good reason. I mean, you know, he was the top tight end last season too. And there's no reason to think that he shouldn't be in a tier all by himself and back of the first round, early second round type of tight end.
And I think what's contributed a little bit to his sort of creeping up so far ahead of the other two elite tier tight ends, I think the contribution there has been, you know, Tyreek Hill, and we don't know what's going on with him. He's going to miss some games. And anybody who was playing daily fantasy, particularly last season, is well aware that in games when Reek was not in the game, I mean, Kelsey was just beasting. Like, that was
But even if Tyreek Hill is not suspended at all, I still think Travis Kelsey belongs in that conversation. I mean, last year, over 100 catches, over 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. And I know that's the ceiling. You can't really go into the season expecting more than that. So there is, you know, I mean, whereas if you have a wide receiver that you take at, say, 9th or 10th overall, you can expect more than that. You could expect 120 catches and 1,500 yards. But again, it's that position scarcity at the top that really does make it an interesting conversation. And often I hear, you know, people that have been in fantasy for years saying, I don't like the way my draft looks when I have a tight end early, and maybe on paper, but I'm starting to think that it may not be suboptimal to take Travis Kelce in the late first round.
Yeah. I mean, here's the argument for it. You know, the straight up argument for taking a tight end that high has got to be just this one thing. You will have that one position on your team that is essentially much better than your opponent almost every week of the season. I mean, it's that simple. If you have Travis Kelce at tight end and your opponent is bringing even TE number 4 by ADP, which is OJ Howard, I mean, you're feeling pretty good that you're going to outscore OJ Howard that week by a solid 7 to 10 fantasy points most weeks. The drop-off to me is that dramatic where, you know, you come in with Kelsey in a PPR format, you're expecting 20 fantasy points every single week.
And home leagues haven't caught up to this yet, but there is definitely a trend right now amongst experienced fantasy drafters where their league settings are putting a little extra emphasis on the tight end. Tight end premium leagues, usually either you start two tight ends or you have your tight end get a point and a half for receptions. And when you factor in that extra half point per reception, Travis Kelce belongs firmly in the first round. And again, I know most home leagues aren't doing tight end premium leagues, but that's just something to keep an eye on as you consume more content, that when people are talking tight end premium, they're usually talking about adding a little bonus for tight ends in order to balance the field. And then I think we would be in agreement that Kelce is indeed a first round selection.
I mean, I'm looking at some projections for Kelce right now, and here it's very interesting. Number one, we can look at what he did last year. Okay, 103 receptions and on 150 targets, 10 touchdowns, but 103 receptions. So just as a comparable to the elite tier, and we already covered elite tier wide receivers in a previous podcast, but you remember, and you nailed it when you said it just before, your elite tier wide receiver, while not necessarily, I would say, projecting above 10 touchdowns, I think that number is as good as a projection, like what he did last year and what he projects for this year. Let's say, assuming it was the same 10, tight ends just, you know, they're red zone weapons, end zone weapons, which is great because they will score more touchdowns. But when you tack on what he did last year, 1,350 yards, 103 receptions, not as good as the elite, super elite
right
tight end and, wide receiver class that's doing about 120. But, man, it's not that far off.
And yeah, and even forget the super elite class. Like, by most accounts, I think, you know, we're about to put out our rankings and projections this week. And if you look at like Antonio Brown, which by most rankings, I see him around wide receiver 8. I think that these Travis Kelce numbers of 105 receptions, 1,300 yards, and 10 touchdowns would be about what we would expect for a baseline season for Antonio Brown, certainly upside for more. So again, if we're going to this kind of confirms what we were talking about before. The elite tight ends are equal to about wide receiver 8, wide receiver 10. in actual value.
Yeah, and it's scarcity of position that in that essence puts them over the top. So, I mean, I think we both agree that Travis Kelce is the consensus top play. I don't mind. I do think I saw – actually, I think you posted a high-dollar draft of some sort or another or an expert league or something where Kelce went seventh overall. I think that might be pushing it a little bit. But top – you know, bottom of the first round, if you're not feeling excited about Davante Adams – or, you know, a running back like Joe Mixon or Terminator Connor or Dalvin Cook or one of those guys that you'll see at the end of the first round sitting there available, Le'Veon Bell, and you want to just say, fuck it. Let me pull the trigger on Kelce.
Have you done any best ball drafts yet where you took Kelce in the first round?
Absolutely. I have.
You did do it.
Now, to say the first round. When I've wound up with Kelce, it's been more in the eight team or the slightly smaller best ball leagues because I think you get an even greater advantage. Those leagues are so you end up with the extra depth. So when you're doing a best ball league, this is I think people miss it. I've taken Kelce and Kittle or Kelce and Kittle in the first or like very early, nailed them both on the same team in some of those leagues because I felt like if I hoard the two best tight ends, the entire league is now screwed. And again, when they're shallower, like 16 or 18 leagues, you're able to fill up your depth with appropriate level wide receivers. And if I get enough wide receiver talent and enough running back talent, I feel like some of those will go off on particular weeks. So nailing the stud tight ends, it's just a strategy play. We'll see if it works.
I'm currently in just a $10 best ball on best ball 10, the old MFL. And I had the 11th pick and it was, you know, I was going to try it. I was determined to take him there just to see, you know, I've done close to 35 or 40 of these drafts now. So, it's time to just experiment with different strategies. And at 11, I took him, came back around and I was, you know, more than happy to take, whatever fell to me there in this specific case, Mixon. Was the running back that fell to me in round two, 2.2. But whereas I probably would have taken Mixon at 1.11 in a real draft, but it just goes to show you that it's better off taking the premium tight end because you're going to like what you see coming around the bend. Now, when you start talking about pick 7, 8, it gets a little more risky because I still think there's those players won't come around. So I think at the end of the first round, especially in tight end premium, you're looking to grab him. Now, I got a question for you. We're talking about Kittle and Ertz. We know the top three. Do you have Kelce as your tight end one in Dynasty?
No.
Okay. Who's your tight end one in Dynasty?
It's just an age situation. I have Kittle as my TE1 in Dynasty at the moment. And it's just purely an age thing. One guy is 29 years old. The other one's like
with
24.
Three surgeries. Kelce's had three surgeries too.
All these tight ends get hurt a lot, so you know they always are getting hurt. That's always a concern with just the position in general. He's had the surgeries. I'm actually trying to scroll out to look at the age of George Kittle.
Kittle's 25.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he's 4 years younger, and that's really the only difference there. Kelce is on a better scoring offense. There's no question. You want to have a piece of this KC offense. It's great.
What's interesting, though, is in Dynasty startups, Kelce goes off the board first. But I agree with you. Kittle is the tight end one. And, yeah, of course, Kelsey's what, two or three in Dynasty? So
I'd say two. Let's talk about – all right, so let's get past Kelce here and let's jump into the Kittle versus Ertz conundrum.
All right, which one do you have at two in redraft?
I have George Kittle as number two in redraft. But I am seeing that ADP, it's very, very close, but ADP data is showing me that it is actually Zach Ertz who is going more often than not second overall, although there is some back and forth to it. Now,
yeah, there's some back and forth. Now, I agree with you that Kittle is two, but for this exercise, why don't you make the argument for him at two, and then I'll make the counter-argument for Ertz at two.
Okay, I mean, my argument for Kittle is really simple. Horrible quarterback play last season. Could not have been worse, right? Just a a murderer's row of ne'er-do-wells at the position. And this guy still wound up with an incredible 18 receptions last season, 1,377 yards. Very similar production, actually, to Travis Kelce in terms of total yardage. Not quite the same number of touchdowns, only five. But
when you said 18, we mean 88 receptions.
88
right?
receptions on 136 targets last year. But that was under a group of ne'er-do-wells at the quarterback position. You're talking about names that you've never heard of before and you will never hear from again. So,
but you don't think Nick Mullins is a starting NFL QB? At some point?
I mean, you know, I'm not convinced.
Right. Who's better, him or Nick Foles? I mean, I know Nick Foles won a Super Bowl and he was great in that. Yeah, but
Nick Foles is way better. Mullins is not a real NFL quarterback, and Nick Foles is. Well, come on. Mullen wasn't even the first man up. Like, they had Mullen, they had some other guy. I can't even remember the name.
They had C.J. Beathard.
Yeah, Beathard. I mean, it was a murderer's row of garbage at the quarterback position for the 49ers. And this guy still produced. When a guy can produce with a shit quarterback, then I'm of the mind. This is one of the reasons I loved DeAndre Hopkins for so many years before he ever really was considered who he is, the best wide receiver in the league. Because before Deshaun Watson came around, it was like Tom Savage, you know, Fred Savage, who the hell, you know, a bunch of turds at quarterback. And this guy was producing. I'm like, oh my God, if this guy gets a real quarterback, the damage he's going to do is ridiculous. You know, so I kind of feel that way about George Kittle. And on the flip side, if it was just dollars to dollars, I might still like Ertz. But Ertz has the competition from Dallas Goedert right now. And Dallas Goedert is loved by his coaching staff. And I already remember some games last season where, you know, you're paying up for Ertz and DFS, and all of a sudden it's Goedert getting those touchdowns. So I don't like the competition that Ertz has on Philadelphia for targets. Ertz has really been a volume-dependent tight end, and that's been great for him. But, you know, now that there's another guy that they want to get involved and throw to at the position, you know, that troubles me. So that is the difference maker for me. It's really the Goedert. Do you have an argument for Ertz?
Yeah. Now, again, let it be known that we just have these guys at 2 and 3. I too have Kittle too, but I've been actually playing around in season long with flipping it. Now, you say Goedert, I say Goddard. But he's gonna get more playing time. Zach Ertz is and Carson Wentz are the best of friends, roommates. When they need to be. I'm sure now they get their own room when they're on the road. But these guys are in lockstep. This is his number one target. Alshon Jeffery, sure, he's the number one wide receiver, but they drafted his replacement this year with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. They're not confident that Jeffery is going to be on the field and play at a high level like he once did. Nelson Aguilar, this is his last year likely on the team. I don't think he can be relied on. So I think Dallas Goedert coming on is going to get his increase in production, not at the expense of Ertz, but at the expense of some of those other wide receivers. They're going to try to work in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside sooner rather than later. And I think that we could see both Ertz and Goedert on the field at the same time.
I love that you're saying Goedert now.
Well, yeah. It's Dallas Goedert.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you did. You did. You used your Jedi mind tricks on.
I did.
But I just don't see a situation why they would go away from Ertz when he's their most reliable team. He's a target monster, like you said, but for good reason. And now that Carson Wentz is back and healthy, the 116 catches, the almost 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns, I think that's an achievable floor again. Now, I don't think there's a bad pick now between the two. Now, with Kittle, he sure is the number one target, but Jimmy Garoppolo is back this year. Now, you would think that the upgrade in QB is good for Kittle, but we just don't know how the connection he has with Garoppolo. Garoppolo, actually, his favorite target when he was healthy was Goodwin.
Yeah, Marquise Goodwin, I remember.
Yeah, another guy that's been kind of forgotten about. They added Deebo Samuel, Dante Pettis. Everyone expects him to take the step to be the number one receiver, which I'm not sure is going to be the case. I think that both of these tight ends are going to be great and are both worth a a second or third round pick, again, especially since there's position scarcity. But I think there's actually less risk with Ertz, but I just don't think you can go wrong at the top. It's similar to when we were talking about the top three or four running backs. Everyone's going to have a little bit different flavor. And I think there's a case to me before for either one of these guys.
I totally agree. But I do think Travis Kelce stands out in his own sort of league of his own as the – I don't think that – there's no real controversy around Kelce being the top pick. So it just comes down to these next two.
And that's what I was saying. Like if you – you know, there's a tight end in every round. But every time that you pass on tight end, you kind of talk yourself into the next round. Right now, it's Kelce in the first. Okay. Oh, wait, I missed tight end. Okay. I took a player, a position player. Now I'm going to go for maybe Zach Ertz in the second. Oh, someone else took him right before me. Okay. I'll go grab Kittle in the third. Oh, somebody took him. So now you're down to the fourth and fifth round. So now who do you have as your tight end four, five, and six?
Well, I first want to say who is currently by ADP data going. And I'll tell you who mine is because I'm surprised. This one surprised me, and I want you to explain this to me. Explain to me why. In ADP data right now, O.J. Howard is coming up off the board as the fourth tight end. What is it about I totally disagree with this draft position. I strongly disagree with it. So what I'm trying to understand is why are people taking O.J. Howard, who is coming off of a 34-reception, 565-yard season? Okay, only 10 games played, had some injury issues. But 34 receptions in 10 games, 3.4 receptions per game, 565 yards, that's 56 yards per game, half of a touchdown per game. What is it about that? He's never had a great chemistry with Jameis Winston. As a matter of fact, Jameis Winston probably throws more tutties to Cameron Brait than he does to O.J. Howard. No good reason, don't know why, but... is what it is. So you tell me what am I missing here that places this guy as TE4 overall by ADP at the moment?
Okay, so good question, and I think there'll be a lot of drafters that think that way as well. O.J. Howard is now coming into year three. Before he got hurt, he was just unbelievable. He actually led the league, not tight ends. He led the league in yards per reception. Four pass catchers. I mean, the guy was catching was about 18 yards a catch, and most of those were done after he actually caught the ball. Tampa has a lot of options, but his efficiency metrics are just off the chart. Now, people are also pointing to new coach Bruce Arians has never featured the tight end. O.J. Howard's not a tight end. He is, sure, maybe by position, but he's fast. He's big. Sure, he can block as well. That's actually a negative with your pass catching tight end. But he was well on his way in year two to having an elite season. If you look at his fantasy points, I mean, in week two, he had almost 20 PPR fantasy points. In week three, about 15. And week six through nine, so that 4-week stretch, that month, he never got anything. He got you averaged about 16 or 17 fantasy points. For your tight end to average about 17 fantasy points in his second year, and he right again, right before he got hurt.
Can I just throw out that those were Ryan Fitzpatrick weeks and when Jameis Winston
not
took
all of
over?
Them.
I mean, those first few weeks were the Philadelphia game, the New Orleans game.
Right, but as you got into week six with Atlanta, 6, 7, 8, and 9, those are all Jameis Winston weeks. And if you watched him, when he caught the ball, he was just faster than cornerbacks. He was bowling people over. O.J. Howard is an amazing football player, and he really shouldn't be classified as a tight end if you watch him play. He goes up. He sucks the ball into his hands. He catches like a wide receiver. He's faster than – the linebackers can't stay with him. The cornerbacks get bullied by him. I think we're talking about – O.J. Howard in the elite tier next year. Right now, he's a bargain at tight end four. So you and I differ here a little bit because you can get him in the beginning of round five, and he deserves to be in that conversation in the first two or three rounds. But you don't have to take him there. In a couple leagues, I keep missing out on him. So I probably will get a little aggressive and start drafting him at the end of the fourth in a few best balls just to have him. Because, again, if a tight end shows anything in year one, a pulse, you're excited. If they show growth, which he showed more than growth in year two, he was just well on his way. And I'm expecting a huge, huge season from O.J. Howard. And again, I'm not going to be surprised when we're talking about him in the top tier next year.
I mean, there you have it. So, you know, a good reasoning for why he's moving up. It sounds like speculative. Because I personally just...
Who do you have over him?
I like Hunter Henry over him.
Okay, so now you're talking about speculation. So we saw O.J. Howard for an 8 or 9 game stretch actually do it. Hunter Henry, listen, I'm hungry for Hunter Henry to do it. And he looked good in very limited, but we didn't get to see him all of last year. He was hurt the year before. He's back, and I'm definitely optimistic about Hunter Henry. But, you know, Mike Williams is there, and I know that O.J. Howard has his wide receiver competition as well. And I wouldn't blame you or blame anybody that took Hunter Henry ahead of him. But we got to actually see it with O.J. Howard.
A little bit.
And his situation actually improved.
Yeah, I mean, it's recency bias, but I noticed, like you said, I noticed number one. I mean, whenever I see a guy, and again, I do like to relate things back to DraftKings and FanDuel pricing because, you know, that's how I do it. But O.J. Howard was never more than a 4K player on DraftKings all of last season. So
he was probably, I mean, again, he was probably underpriced. A lot of times DraftKings, like,
yeah, they do
pricing,
underprice the tight end, but there's no question.
Right. And it also, it lags, pricing lags, like pricing catches. Pricing is not projection forward in those sites. It's lagging. So the guy does the production. He shows he can do it on a consistent basis, and then the pricing catches up.
That's true. I mean, so he just wasn't – you know, I really don't get it. But I think that part of that is – that's what's interesting about the tight end position. After you get past these first three, I mean, even if you look at the various ADP data, if you look at various consensus rankings, they're all over the place on these guys. They're all over the place. So
do we agree that there's a definite next tier? So after those big three off the board, the Hunter Henry, O.J. Howard, and do you have Evan Ingram in the next tier?
Yeah, I think Evan Ingram and even a Jared Cook would be floating around this tier level for me.
Okay. So do you want to – what is going to be your draft strategy in your most important league? When you're doing a redraft league, and let's say it's like a $300 entry fee, and what are you doing? Are you trying to actively take one of the big three, or are you just waiting to rounds 4 through 6 to get one of that next tier?
I have actually attempted as often as possible. My feeling is you get one luxury in your draft, and I consider tight end and quarterback to be luxury positions. So I think that you can safely make a decision that I want one luxury player in my draft, and if that's a high-end tight end, then it's perfectly acceptable to grab one of the top three. And that's what I've tried to do. It's usually the third one. So for me, it's been Kittle more often than not. But
no, I love that. That's a good pick. Now, if you miss on the big three, are you dipping into the pool in round 5 with O.J. Howard, Ingram, and Hunter Henry? Or are you now waiting for round 7 and 8 for the next group?
It depends on – let's say if I'm seeing one of these guys dropping a little bit further than I think they should, that's when I'll pounce. But I'm definitely not aggressively going after the second tier. And O.J. Howard, I don't think I have a single share of. I just
– Get one. I'm telling you, get one.
I don't mind. I will. You know, you've convinced me. I listen to the GOAT season long says, and you know, when you make an argument, that's why I ask you to make it. I'm like, shit, I don't get it. I'm trying to understand, but I really don't. I still don't foresee Howard. I just don't like his connection with Jameis Winston, and I never have. I saw how much better he played and how much better he produced with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that started to make me think maybe it's the quarterback himself that just doesn't have a connection with this player. Because what you pointed out about his great games in the beginning of the season, I saw those with Fitzpatrick. But then when Jameis Winston came back, yeah, it's kind of like Howard's productivity fell off. So I didn't like that. Evan Ingram, he's tied to the Giants. Nothing ever excites me about being tied to the Giants offense. They fucking suck, and they will continue to suck this year. So, you know, it's a losing team. But that said, Evan Ingram at that point, he's definitely – there's no other wide receivers on the team to throw to, so I think he'll improve. Hunter Henry, he's on a team where we know the quarterback loves to throw to his tight end. the Chargers have produced quality outcomes from the tight end position for the last 10 years, for the whole of the Philip Rivers era. So I kind of have this belief that certain teams and systems produce at certain position groups, which is why certain teams never produce at the running back position, whereas other ones, no matter what fucking turd you throw back there, always – the Steelers, it doesn't matter who you throw back there. They're going to score points from the running back position. You know, the Bucs right now, no matter what the hell you do, they don't seem to score from the running back position. You know, different teams or the Falcons, they never score from the running back position. It just is what it is, right? Why that happens, it's – I don't know, but it does. So I roll with that.
All right. One of the most polarizing tight ends this year, who's been up and down the draft board, is Eric Ebron. ADP has him as the seventh tight end off the board right now. He was going as tight end 4 or 5 when best ball season opened up in February, going in the 5th round. Now the price is a little better in like the 8th round. But what is your feeling on Eric Ebron, who broke out last year with the Colts, had an amazing, incredible amount of touchdowns. As I'm clicking through now, he ended up with 13 receiving touchdowns, which really carried his value. I see a lot of chatter out there that people don't like Ebron. They call him a prime regression candidate with the addition of Devin Funchess. But I don't know, where do you fall on this? I fall in the camp where that worked for the Colts last year. Why the hell wouldn't they go back to continuing to target Ebron in the red zone? What do you feel about Eric Ebron in 2019? Are you avoiding him actively, or are you trying to buy?
I have concerns about Ebron. I think the same concerns that the field has. The prime regression thing is real. 66 receptions. Not a ton of yards, 750, very good, 13 touchdowns. But here's the concern. And listen, I love the Colts offense. I want exposure to it wherever I can get it. But I think the reason that there's concern about Ebron is because he came off the field a lot. Like, he was not – when Jack Doyle was out there, you know, they were splitting time. So the Colts still seem to like Doyle as well. They seem to bring on Ebron as sort of a red zone specialist for a lot of the season. He was hurt a lot last year, and there are some durability concerns with him, as I think you have to have with every tight end, by the way. But you just can't keep up the pace of 13 touchdowns. If he's not scoring those 13 touchdowns, he's just not putting up big numbers.
Right, but I'm saying, if you're the Colts and you're saying, okay, let's review the year. What worked well for us last year? Let's think about it. Okay, in the playoffs, Marlon Mack ran well. Let's go with him. He's going to be good. All right, Nyheim Hines caught the ball pretty damn well as a rookie. All right, let's make sure we get Nyheim Hines. All right, T.Y. Hilton, he was there. He caught our long balls. We're a little weak at wide receiver. Okay, let's add Paris Campbell. All right, now let's talk about our red zone. What worked well? Eric Ebron, that worked well. You know what? Let's ignore him. Let's make sure we don't target Eric Ebron again this year. Let's totally ignore what got us 20% of our touchdowns. Let's not do that again. You think that's going to happen? I hear everybody saying it. I'm going to say that Frank Reich is going to talk with his coaching staff, and I think there's a chance they say, holy shit, Eric Ebron was a monster in the red zone. We need to do that more.
There's a lot of upside with Ebron if they just give him the volume. The question is, are they going to – they like this Mo Alie-Cox kid. Jack Doyle is there and healthy. He wasn't healthy last year. Now
– is he healthy? I heard he's questionable for the start of training camp. I mean, he's a 29 going on 30. I know they do – I know Andrew Luck does like to throw to him. I mean, you're right about that. But talk about a guy that had trouble staying healthy.
Is he going to suck up some of that volume? I don't know. But I do think that where he's going now, if you're talking about T.E. – listen, if we expected him to score 13 touchdowns, this is the issue. The regression is built into the price. If we expected him to score another 66 targets, forget the reception number, targets. 110 targets is more impressive to me than 66 reception. People are talking about regression at the touchdown level. I say he's got to have regression, positive regression at the reception level, because 110 targets, 66 receptions is actually very, very poor in terms of his conversion percentage. If he could get it up to 75% conversion rate or 80% conversion rate for a tight end, which isn't unreasonable, and get those receptions from 66 to 80 or 85, then it doesn't matter if he goes down to 8 touchdowns this year. He's still going to score really well. So I just want volume in the Andrew Luck offense. The concern here, though, you know, there's a couple other competitors, but you're right. I mean, Jack Doyle, how much of a real concern is he? We don't know. How healthy is he? I don't know.
Who would you rather have for 2019? Eric Ebron coming into his second year. I know they added Funchess, so okay, in that Colts offense. Or Jared Cook, first year Saints offense, where they traditionally spread it around, and Jared Cook is coming off an amazing year with the Raiders. So straight up, you're on the clock, 8th round. Both of those guys are on the clock. You're ready to take your tight end. They're both on the board. Which one are you taking straight up?
Well, number one, that's a legit decision that you're going to be sitting staring at. This is not a hypothetical. So, that's like correct. Those two are right next to each other. And
so what are you going to do?
I do think I'd go with – man, it's a tough call. I do like
– Cook is 31.
I like Cook, though. I mean, Cook had a great year. He's in an offense that does produce from the tight end position if they feature him. He's 32 years old. I like Jared Cook here. So
you would take Jared Cook
I think I'd probably go with Ebron there. But, I mean, I think that's a legitimate place where you have to really stop and think hard.
Yeah.
You know, so that is – those two guys are – and you know, right after them. So as we're rolling through this ranking, because those are the 7 and 8 ranked guys, and it depends on – it's funny. If you look at the FFC, which is the higher dollar tournament, they have Eric Ebron as number 7 overall in ADP. But if you go –
you're talking about the NFFC, right?
Yeah.
The
NFFC has him at 7th overall, whereas, some of the other sites have him as 8th overall. So it's the lower dollar.
Like the high dollars, right? The high dollar drafters are being a drop more aggressive now. Their ADP is 85 and 86, so it looks like they're going back to back. I mean, you're just like you said, you're having to take that pick. You're having to make that decision.
You want to hear something funny? I see the same. Dynamic going with Hunter Henry and Evan Ingram, where the FFC people, the NFFC people have Hunter Henry 5th overall with Ingram 6th, and then Ebron and then Jared Cook in that order. Whereas on NFL.com or Yahoo or, you know, some of those type of sites, it's different where it has Ingram 5th, Henry 6th, then Cook, then Ebron. So it's real.
I like to see what the high stakes drafters are doing, because those are the people with some real skin in the game. Those are the people that are putting $300 into drafts on a nightly basis. Those are people that have actual, you know, some of those drafts are $500 or $1,000 entries. And when you have real skin in the game, that's when you find out what you're. And again, you don't need to have that kind of skin in the game to decide what you would do. But when you actually have money in that matters, that's when you find out what you really
pay. By the way, I think it's very important to concentrate. I mean, that's a lot of what DFS Army is all about. With our coaches on the DFS side and whatnot, you're dealing with people who are putting a lot of their own money into these contests.
Yeah.
And they're researching the shit out of them. If they're sharing that research with you, listen, you're not putting in $5,000-$6,000 a night in MLB or on MMA or in NASCAR or some sport like that without being incredibly well researched. And then if you share that research with them, great. But you don't last very long putting in $3,000-$5,000 a night if you're not kind of good at this stuff. So, and the same with these high dollar drafters. Like, you might not want to go up against them in the league, but you certainly want to see what they're doing and try to replicate it, especially, you know, if you're not someone who has all the time in the world to dedicate to this level of research. So, all right, let's move on from that grouping, because we've got through the top 8 here.
Okay.
And you know, all right, they're all very close together, and we might find some late round sleepers and some gems late in the draft, which I think exist. Consensus number 9 overall after Ebron Cook go off the board right now. So you're looking at a little grouping here, I would say, with David Njoku, Vance McDonald, and maybe Austin Hooper. Austin Hooper, yeah, I think there's a weird one. Again, he's kind of a weird one in there for me.
Well, there's some sneaky value, because the perception on Austin Hooper is that he hasn't done much. Now, remember, he's only going into what? Let's see. I'm just checking.
He's going into year four.
And his numbers last year, he had 71 catches, only about 660 yards and 4 touchdowns. But he was useful. He was useful in a handful of weeks. He was one of those players that you picked up either off waivers, and you were able to use him for a long stretch last year before he tailed off again. And I think that if you miss out on that elite tier, if you miss out on the second grouping, the O.J. Howard grouping, and then Vance McDonald is the guy I've been targeting in this area. I think it would be on the Steelers with Antonio Brown gone, mostly second year players and rookies there outside of Juju Smith-Schuster, that Vance McDonald is going to be relied upon to have a bigger season. So he's the guy that I'm zeroed in on in that. I'm okay with Austin Hooper, but if I miss on McDonald, I'm usually passing over Hooper and David Njoku and just waiting for the next grouping. And again, that's what I was talking about at the top. Every round, there seems to be a tight end that slots in. And when I miss Vance McDonald round 8, I'm like, okay, should I have Austin Hooper round 9? Oop, someone just took Hooper. Forget it. I'll wait till round 10. All right. Now, David Njoku.
Let me throw this out there for you. If I told you, now we know, or we'll say it, what Hooper did. Last season, Hooper, Pittsburgh Steelers offense, mostly.
Are you talking about Hooper's?
No, I'm sorry, not Hooper. Vance.
McDonald.
Vance McDonald. Last season, Vance McDonald got you 50 receptions on 72 targets, 610 yards, 4 touchdowns. Almost identical numbers, by the way, or similar numbers to Vance McDonald, to Hooper, outside of the, a little bit fewer receptions. So he did a little bit more with a few less receptions.
I think the difference being, though, that of the 160 or plus targets that have been vacated by Antonio Brown leaving.
Well, not just that, but also Jesse James is gone. So I'm going to find James's numbers from last year. If I can, I got to scroll all the way down here to find Jesse James in this. Here he is. Okay.
You're gonna wear out your mouse.
Yeah, I had to scroll all the way down. But here's what Jesse James did last year in the Pittsburgh offense, because it was a 1A, 1B situation in terms of volume, with James really being the B, but nonetheless, 30 receptions on 39 targets, 423 yards, 2 touchdowns. So if we kind of add, let's say we give 50% of that over to McDonald, and then the other 50% will go to like Xavier Grimble or whatever other random tight ends the Steelers have going on this year. So even if you just added 15 more receptions to Vance McDonald, another 200 yards, another touchdown, I mean, he's looking pretty good. Vance McDonald's looking pretty good. He's looking like a very serviceable tight end. As long as he can stay healthy, he's the number one guy. There's no competition for number one overall on Pittsburgh at this point. And Pittsburgh is a team that has traditionally produced points to the tight end position. So,
Yeah, even going back to like when Heath Miller was there, I mean, he was still a serviceable tight end for fantasy when he was there. So, yeah, I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah, and like you said, no more Antonio Brown. That's many, many, many targets to be spread around across the Moncrief, James Washington, Juju Smith, Schuster, but also Vance McDonald grouping. Jalen Samuel I'll throw in there as well. See?
Yeah. So with David Njoku moving down a little bit, and yeah, I think you said it perfectly, by the way, on Vance McDonald. And again, that's the guy I'm targeting in that group. If I miss out on that middle tier, there people are getting a little aggressive on Jared Cook, and if Ebron falls, that's fine. But Vance McDonald doesn't seem to have the same sort of shine on him. People perceive him as an injury guy, even though he's played the full season, 2 years in a row. So yeah, if in round 9, I'm happy to take Vance McDonald.
Totally a guy you can wait on. You don't have to rush. Yeah. You've already got a bench player or two before. You know, you've got a backup running back on your bench, a backup possibly wide receiver on your bench by this point. And now there's Vance staring at you like, oh shit, I forgot to take a tight end. Let me grab this guy. You won't be disappointed. That is a guy I love there. I don't mind this tier. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, if it's
Ebron. Yeah, I mean, this tier is tough though, man. Because yeah, the Ebron, yes, that's fine. Yeah. But I think
no, when you go beyond this guy, it starts to get very difficult. Right after Vance McDonald goes, yeah, and Njoku.
Yeah, David Njoku, I'm out because it's yeah. I mean, I know it, and he looks like he's gonna have weeks that are pop in sort of weeks that win somebody a league, but it just won't be their week, but it won't be me because it's going to be way too hard to predict. They just added another target monster in Odell Beckham there. And, you know, Duke Johnson's going to catch passes. coming into year two, they have a couple of receivers that had pretty solid rookie years. Like Callaway is going to hopefully take a step in the right direction.
We'll see about
David
that.
David Njoku just going
we'll
yeah, I mean, it's sure. – yeah, I hear you. But I just – David Njoku, I think he'll have weeks where he does get you two touchdowns and 90 yards. But I just do not think you're going to be able to predict it. There's other guys I like further down the board. When David Njoku goes off the board at round 9, I'm usually looking at a quarterback around then. So that's why I'm usually out.
This is a brutal spot for tight end, I have to say. So this whole level, and I'm just going to throw out a bunch of the names that are going next overall here, because every single one of these guys has massive, massive, scary question marks. So you're talking Njoku, you're talking Delanie Walker, old as fuck, barely moves.
Yeah, no good. I mean, Delanie Walker, I've heard people try to make a case for Delanie Walker, and I know he has been their best receiving option, but this new coach is going to target the wide receivers they drafted AJ Brown early. Delanie Walker's not going to be a part of this moving forward. He might be interrupt some of the fantasy value of some of the other guys, but he's just not going to be a viable tight end in my opinion.
He can't move anymore. Listen, I observed this. I think we had this conversation last year before the season started, and it came so
– I like Delanie last year.
I like Delanie in terms of – he's a guy that I always enjoyed. I always thought you can get him late. He was always undervalued. But the one thing I said last season on our pod, it could have even been two seasons ago, but I know I talked about this last season as well. Every time this guy gets hit, it looks like he's hurt. Every single time he gets tackled, he takes a long time to get up.
In week one last year, he got hurt. He was out for the season.
I know, but
he didn't get up.
I know, but I talked about it before the season. Like, this guy is so beat up already. He's so shop-worn that, like, every time, even the season before, because I've had Delanie on a lot of season-long teams over the years, and so I watch him, and I've also used him a lot of DFS. I'm watching the games, and just every time he gets down, he's like, oh, no, I think he's hurt. And he'll just struggle his way back up, kind of limp his way back to the huddle. And, you know, and then he comes back out and goes again. But last season we saw it finally come up to him. But I have talked about that. It's literally in writing where I'm like, every time this guy gets hit, you just watch him get up, and he's so slow to get up. And he just looks like he's hurt all the time.
In your personal rankings, when you put out your tight end rankings, who are you going to have? Delanie Walker, is he going to be higher than Kyle Rudolph, or is that like the line?
He's higher than Kyle Rudolph. This part, I'm having a lot of personal trouble in this area because I kind of like some old school names that are ADP much lower in this area.
Okay, we don't have to go one by one then. Yeah. So why don't you just start telling me about a couple of the guys that, you know, who you like at this point in the draft. It's the 10th round. It's later. Who do you like, and what round are you comfortable taking them in if you've missed out on all the
That's a good idea. And one of the guys I've been going after here, you know, let's say I miss out on the whole top crew and Vance McDonald is gone, and I'm looking at this next crew, and I don't like him. I don't like Trey Burton, and I don't like Kyle Rudolph, and I don't really like a rookie tight end and TJ Hockenson. And so I'm looking at the Chris Herndon, Jimmy Graham, grouping, which you can get a few rounds.
Jimmy Graham's being very, very undervalued. Jimmy Graham, I think there's something left.
Yeah, I think so too. And Jimmy Graham, that for me is a guy I have on a lot of my teams because A, you can get him late. B, all of these what I think are much more turdly tight ends are going ahead of him. And there's Jimmy Graham sitting there staring at you, and it's like, hey, I'm Jimmy Graham. I'm the starting tight end for the Packers. And yeah, I had a mediocre to poor season last year, and you know, yeah, I'm getting kind of old now, and yeah, I'm injured a lot, but fuck it. You can pick me up in the 13th round and, you know, pick up somebody in the 14th also, just in case. So, you know, as long as this guy's healthy and playing for the games that he can be healthy and play, you know, if you look at his receptions last year, I think it was more of a perceived value versus poor performance. He didn't score enough touchdowns, but he did have 55 receptions, 90 targets last year. That's not bad. That's better than everybody else that we just talked about that's going ahead of
him. You know, in any job, in any industry, corporate America, sports, the way to get performance out of somebody and really maximize is to put pressure on them by hiring their replacement and putting someone that's ready to take your job. And I think that sometimes when there's someone right there ready to take our job, we perform at our best because we're feeling the pressure.
That's kind of like you about to take my fantasy football rankings job away from me.
what's it called? I mean, I'm sure you don't feel pressure. I'm sure you feel relief from that. But what the Packers did is they spent a mid-round, I think a third-round pick on Jay Sternberger. They like him, and he's a legitimate threat to Jimmy Graham's future on that team. And I think that Jimmy Graham sees this as a now or never. If he wants to continue his NFL career, he needs to have a big year, and he's capable of it, especially since there's no real solidified number two wide receiver. Now, we've heard a lot of talk in Green Bay, Geronimo Allison. Some people are Jake Kumerow people. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is a trendy and hopeful pick. But again, outside of Davante Adams, there is no cemented number two. It's wide open for the taking. And we know just from past experience that all it takes is trust from Aaron Rodgers, and he'll force feed you the ball. And Jimmy Graham has that post-up move that he does in the end zone where he gets there, he turns around, he boxes out the defender, and he catches touchdowns. And I think that with his replacement now on the roster, feeling the pressure, I could see, and especially at his draft cost, tight end 20 in the 13th, 14th round, if you miss out, I'm okay starting my tight end streaming adventure with Jimmy Graham week one.
That's what I'm saying. So I agree with it. I think Jimmy Graham is a player that, again, TE by ranking 17 or 18, 20. Depending on 19, depending on which site that you're looking at on which particular day in terms of the ADP data. But I'm like, you're really taking Dolph ahead of Kyle Rudolph, ahead of Jimmy Graham. What the fuck did Kyle Rudolph do last year except disappoint week after week? And now there's I think there's another tight end on that team that they're –
Yeah, they drafted Irv Smith out of Alabama, who I like a lot, especially in dynasty leagues. I think he's going to be a stud. But they did something peculiar where they signed Rudolph to an extension. I think that extension is one of those things where they can get out from it, you know, in 2 years. But I mean, Kyle Rudolph did finish the season with a bang, with a 9-catch, 122-yard, 2-touchdown game. But that was a meaningless week 16 game. They were kind of toast, I think, by that point. Other than that, it was just in spots. But again, I guess the same rule must apply when your replacement's on the roster. They drafted Irv Smith. Maybe Kyle Rudolph is that tight end that we all hate. Everybody hates him, that nobody's expecting, nobody sees it coming. Maybe he has one of those breakout seasons, you know, maybe an outlier season at that, and feels the heat coming from him. So I don't want to overlook him and say it can't be done, but I, like you, I'm not drafting Kyle Rudolph. I'm not excited about him either.
I have a recency negative bias about him in the sense that when Kirk Cousins went to the Vikings, you know, we know Kirk Cousins loves the tight end position. Reed and, you know, some other ne'er-do-wells behind Reed whenever Reed was injured would always produce fantasy points. Vernon Davis, what the hell was that guy's name?
Niles Paul.
Yeah, so you'd get these no-names producing at the tight end position for the Redskins under the Kirk Cousins regime. So I kind of figured when he moved over to Minnesota that, you know, that Rudolph would do well. And I actually think that Minnesota's offense really was lacking in terms of a little bit more focus on the tight end position last season. And I think the team would do better if they did increase that, because when you're just throwing to two wide receivers all the time, it's great for fantasy football production and for your wide receivers. It's just two guys, right? But it's probably not great for opposing defenses being able to game plan against you. Like, they really should have featured Rudolph more, and you did see it in towards the end of the season for that last game. I'm trying to see if he did it for more than one game. But, yeah, that Week 16 game where Rudolph went off. But really, it was just like the only game all season when that happened.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, you know, some sort of old school veterans, guys that produced for us in the past that nobody's thinking about this year. So I want to stay with that theme. The cost has never been lower for Jordan Reed. Now, I'm not expecting Jordan Reed to be a league winner and a week winner like he used to be, but in that same category of veterans that used to produce that have a chance to be every week starters, are you considering Jordan Reed? I've drafted him in a couple spots, and we know with him it's health. But when he's on the field, if you in the 14th round, 12th round, 13th round, I've grabbed him in a couple spots. Again, not thinking he's going to set the world on fire, but that he could hold down the position for me for hopefully the first month of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. In best ball leagues, probably even less so. You really want to avoid those injury-prone guys in best ball leagues in particular. But let me throw this at you then. Jordan Reed, going to be dealing with a rookie quarterback. We know that generally is not something where it tends to lead to incredible fantasy performances. We know that the Redskins are a little more run-focused type of a team right now. Run and defense is kind of how they did it last season, try to hide the quarterback position a little bit. Jordan Reed versus Greg Olsen, where...
Okay, so we're staying with the old
guy. Yeah, we're staying with the old injury-prone guy. Now, Greg Olsen, scary.
Yeah, I don't
got that scary foot thing going on. No.
Yeah, I don't...
But, I mean, can we agree that when Greg Olsen is, if by some miracle... Greg Olsen is healthy, and his foot is fully healed, and his back issues are okay, and somehow he could stay healthy. This is a guy who has produced when on the field with Cam Newton for years and years and years, and no one wants a piece of him.
Yeah, including me. I like what the Panthers have done. I think they've done something really smart, and that's they noticed – They really zeroed in on what Cam Newton's skill set is. And last year was the obvious epitome of his troubles, not being able to throw downfield. This year, by all accounts, his shoulder's healthy. He's ready to go. But they've surrounded him with fast, short area players. They drafted Curtis Samuel a few years ago in the second round, DJ Moore in the first round last year, Christian McCaffrey a couple years ago in the first round. And those are all the same type of players. They're short area pass catchers that can go the distance, super speed all over the field. They got rid of Devin Funchess. They got rid of – who was the other big
– Kelvin Benjamin, the worst.
Kelvin Benjamin. They tried the Twin Towers approach with those two big receivers. It didn't work for Cam. So now they recognized it, and they surrounded him with all these speedy receivers. And I think even the tight end that they got a couple years ago, Ian Thomas – is a super athletic, fast tight end that, again, could come on and have some weeks where he pops. Greg Olsen does not fall into the same category for me. He's more of the Jason Witten old guy leadership role. And sure, will he have a? I don't see him being useful many or any predictable weeks. So he's one of those guys I'm pushing even way down the board.
I mean, I don't know how much further you can push him down than like TE 20.
Well,
I mean,
he's tight end 23. I'd rather, right. No, I see what you're saying. I'd rather take a shot. You're right. I mean, it's, you're deciding between, well, I'd rather take a shot on Mike Gesicki coming into his second year, tight end 24. We already talked about Ian Thomas. There's been some positive buzz on Gerald Everett and a few of the second tier rookies. Let me ask you another question. We're talking about down the board at tight end. Let's say you really miss. Now, Arizona, new system, whole new set of wide receivers. Their tight ends are Ricky Seals-Jones, Charles Clay. They have Max Williams, who was a first-round draft pick of the Ravens a couple years ago, and also Caleb Wilson, who was Mr. Irrelevant this year, the last pick of the seventh round in the real draft. Are any of the Arizona tight ends – well, let me ask it differently. If you have to pick one of the Arizona tight ends, say we're in a draft, and it's only Arizona tight ends, which one of the four tight ends are you taking a shot on?
I mean, I do not like this group, but if I have to, it's Ricky Seals-Jones. Ricky Seals-Jones at least has had, you know, receptions and some – quality games in his career, not a lot, but, you know, 34 receptions last year for Arizona, nothing special. They didn't have a quarterback last year, so it's hard to judge it. He's young, though, 24, and I think of that group, I don't know anything about Max Williams. I didn't even realize that that's a guy on Arizona. And
I mean, he was a first-round draft pick of Baltimore like 3 years ago. He just didn't work out there. He was, you know, picked up over here. I mean, yeah, I agree with you there. And Charles Clay, it's, you know, it's run out of gas.
I mean,
Clay
right?
is There's no more
super
gas.
Old, you know.
And then Caleb Wilson, I mean, you know, he's a good athlete.
Last pick. That's essentially an UDFA. We can't consider people like that. We don't even know he's going to make the team.
Well,
But
didn't you and I like Trey Quinn on Washington Redskins? He was Mr. Irrelevant the year before, last pick in last round. Now he looks like he's locked into a slot role. What I'm saying is, Mr. Irrelevant actually could. I hear what you're saying.
You're getting into dynasty level analysis. If you're drafting your season long team, I mean, you don't need to even think about this turd group. Right. You know, you only need one tight end on most teams. You know, in best ball, we're drafting two or three, and even with three, I'm not getting to that level. So, you know,
let me ask you a question. Are any of the rookie tight ends, because you know the rookie tight ends always get overdrafted, especially when they go in the first round, like T.J. Hockenson on Detroit and Noah Fant on Denver. Are any of those guys appealing to you for 2019?
Yeah, I actually think that both Hockenson and Fant both have a shot to be productive at some point over the course of the season. My concern and my warning to people would be, do not expect these guys to be productive early. You know, some of these, it takes a long, the tight end position is probably one of the most difficult outside of quarterback, one of the most difficult offensive positions to really learn and master.
That's smart to point that out. But the reason is because they're really learning two NFL positions at once. They're learning how to be a wide receiver and they're learning how to be an offensive lineman. So imagine having to study an NFL playbook and then imagine having to study a second whole set of playbook. You have to be a lineman and a receiver. That's why sometimes it does take 2-3 years for them to develop.
And just being a receiver in the NFL takes time to develop. It's not the same position as it really is in college. So you add that in, even just wide receivers who don't have to learn blocking schemes have a hard time. So, I mean, I think we saw Evan Ingram in his first year be productive, you know, in the last few games of his first season. You know, all of a sudden week 14, you're like, who's this guy? Oh, yeah, the rookie's coming on. So that's the kind of stuff you really have to expect from these rookies. You cannot expect a rookie tight end to come out and light the world on fire. That's also one of those reasons why you can look at a Chris Herndon coming into year two and say, oh, well, you know, let's see what he did last year. Now, again, I don't love the Jets' passing offense per se, but all right, so he had 39 receptions, 56 targets year one, 4 touchdowns. If he can improve on that and get to, you know, 85 targets and 60 receptions, great. You know, that's that year two leap that somebody like this can take. But even a year two tight end, really, really tough for these guys to kind of break out into any sort of top-level productivity at this position. I think George Kittle is an exception, and I think that's one of those reasons why I like that guy a lot. Like, that dude was producing kind of early in his career, and I think he's going in. I think he's in his third season just now.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're looking for in a tight end, especially dynasty players, like you're looking for a tight end that has a pulse in year one. If they show anything in year one, you got to be excited about them, and that's definitely what Chris Herndon did. And just backtracking a half a second, you know what I find fascinating, that when we're talking about the rookie tight ends, the top two, the Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson. It's amazing that they were on the same college team. That really just blows my mind that two tight ends on the same college team went in the first round. It's incredible. And Fant being more of the raw project, I think Hockenson's going to be a perennial top five, top eight tight end. But just going back to what you said, Chris Herndon as a rookie showed something. So I think people are optimistic for him in year two. He's looking at, by the way, for those drafting early, he's looking at a 2-game suspension for, I believe it was alcohol, driving while intoxicated related. And then the Jets have an early bye. So just make sure you have a backup plan if you're drafting Chris Herndon early on the first month. He's going to be a little bit frustrating.
Can you agree that, you know, a little DWI, young, been there, done that. You know what I'm saying? Like, can't hold it against.
Yeah, but you know, I don't hold it against him, but I'm saying it is a super in the age of Uber and Lyft, there's absolutely no reason to have that happen to you. I know what you're saying. You're out, you make a bad decision. Oh, it's only around the block, but it just, you know, and I don't want to make.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. That is the most boneheaded.
I'm
making a joke. I know. Like, no, that's the most fucking. If you have endless money, or even you have rookie NFL, you know,
even if you don't have money,
no money, you know what I'm saying? Press. Like, these are even just NFL money, which, you know, a guy like Herndon probably only makes, you know, $400,000 a year only. You're making $400,000. Call a fucking Uber, man. Come on. What are you driving home from the bar? Don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, if we're all to be judged by our worst days, it would be – we would all – You know, yeah, we would be good. Embarrassed if we
wouldn't look good.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, sure. It just you learn from mistakes, especially when you're young and you're in these situations. But again, just from a fantasy perspective, just be aware he might be out week one, week two, and their bye is in week four. So you may not get to see him until, you know, for one game in week three, and then week five, you may have to drop him. So I like Herndon, but I may be the guy picking him up when he's dropped. For a hot free agent.
It really is tough to carry a backup tight end who's not playing for the first
and five few six man especially in 5-6 man benches. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you're in the NFFC and you have a 10 man bench, no problem. But 5-6 man bench, second tight end, especially a hot running back comes, you're looking for a guy to drop. That's going to be likely be him. So I'm not in redraft. I'm passing on Herndon just for that reason. Is I'm predicting he will be dropped.
Okay, that's a fair thing. And like you said, you know, listen, when you're talking about TE16 or something, really, do you need to carry that shit on your bench? Like, yeah, that's the kind of player Herndon you should pick up during the season.
Right, but Herndon has hype, and he will be drafted in the, you know, in the 11th and 12th round. But again, just based on that, those factors we identified, I think it's a prudent strategy just to let someone else take him. And if you are one of those teams that like him, you'll be able to get him in week three or four.
And I will say this on the positive side for Herndon. You know, if I want to make an argument for that player, the Jets do not have a possession type wide receiver, really, or at least one that will command targets. I mean, you want to call Quincy Enunwa that? I don't.
How about Crowder? They signed Jason.
James Crowder's a little guy. He's a slot receiver. You know, he's not going to compete with the
You don't call him a possession?
No, he's a slot receiver. I know what you're thinking with that. I kind of mean more like a red zone target type guy.
Oh, okay.
What you use a tight end for a lot of the time, which is middle, or the put a big guy in the end zone, throwing it up and let him go get it. They don't have a go getter in that entire offense. That's not what Robbie Anderson's a deep threat type, you know, throw a bomb, let him outspeed the opposition. He's a T.Y. Hilton style player.
That's a good comp.
Yeah, I'm not going to call him a Tyreek Hill. So I'm going to say T.Y. Hilton style player. And then you have Enunwa, who's more of like a Michael Crabtree style, kind of even smaller. I don't really know what he does well, but, you know, he does haul in receptions thrown his way, fine, but not unexciting. And then you have a little guy in Jay Crowder, who is just a little slot guy. Again, not a guy who's going to get targets in the end zone. So there is an opening for Herndon to do some things. The upside is there. His rookie season is not dramatically different from what George Kittle did in his rookie season. So
no, there that's the point. Like, he showed more than a little something his rookie year. The next natural step would be that he will take a nice big step this year. People are expecting that.
And by the way, I want to point out, as a Jets fan on this side, because you're watching these games, as a Jets fan, you're a Jets fan too, so we both, I think, have a little more insight into this team, but they hadn't been committed to Herndon as their sort of primary tight end at all last season. It was him. There were three other names, Sterling. There were a bunch of names, and it wasn't clear last season who sort of...
It became clear towards the middle of the season that Sam Darnold knew that Chris Herndon, and he just became more impressive.
Yes.
He's a physical specimen, this guy. And I think that most the drafting perception of him right now is that he turned it on in the middle of the season, he finished strong, and that he's going to take the next step. And I think that people listening to this podcast can benefit from the information that we talked about. Let someone else draft him, even if you like him, for the reasons that we stated earlier.
Or draft him if you're in a deeper league. You know, that's a 4 or 5-person bench league. You know, understand the type of league that you're in. You know, if I'm in a 12-team, again, there's so many different scenarios. I'm not drafting that guy probably in a 10-team league. If I'm in a 12-team league with a deep bench, yeah, you draft him.
If you're in a 10-team league, get in a 12-team league. I don't play in a 10-team league, not because I'm better. It's just, it's not that fun for me. Everyone's team is stacked. And I think that as we evolve as fantasy players, and we want to challenge ourselves a little bit with these new formats, and I think a 12-team format is the right way to challenge yourself to get better. I don't think you get better playing fantasy in a 10-team league. I think that there could be, if you're doing like a best ball format and you just want to try a few things out, sure, no problem. But again, that's how I do it. Everyone has their own way.
And what's worse? we have to save this for our league type and commissioner pod, which we have to do because
we can do
definitely the goat of that stuff too. But what's worse, a 10-team league or standard non-PPR league?
I still think and they're both horrendous. But 10-team league is terrible. I'd rather be in a 12-team non-PPR than be in a 10-team with all the bells and whistles.
But you would agree that.
Oh yeah, that's splitting hairs at the bottom, not at the top. So let's just, I think that there's a couple trendy sleepers we both agree on. Everyone's talking about Mark Andrews on Baltimore. He had that beautiful touchdown catch towards the end of the season. Big bomb from Lamar Jackson. A lot of hope there. You mentioned Dallas Goedert as a second year tight end that's going to get a lot of playing time. I think if Dallas Goedert landed on any other team besides one that has an elite tight end, we'd be talking about him in the top 10.
I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Goedert, but okay.
Is there anyone outside of Mark Andrews and Dallas Goedert who you like as a sleeper? Because those are the two tight ends that are getting talked about on every podcast.
I'm going to throw one name out there that I've taken. Now, you mentioned Mike Gesicki on Miami.
Yeah.
And he's interesting.
Yeah, I like Gesicki.
He's interesting because, he's a highly drafted guy and everybody has forgotten about him. And Miami doesn't really have any sort of cachet at all. So no one wants anything to do with that. But I like him as well as, let me take a crazy dice roll with this guy type of guy. But he only had 22 receptions. But the guy I've taken towards the end of best ball leagues, and this is much more of a best ball thing than anything else, because he's always there in the last round. I'm almost always sitting with just two tight ends, and I like to have a third in best ball leagues. Do you agree? Do you go for three tight ends in best ball?
It depends on who they are. If I have one of the big three, it's usually two. And if I have someone in the lower than the Vance McDonald tier, I'm trying to get three if I can. Sometimes I'd rather ideally have three defenses. You have to usually choose. So, mostly I'm going for two because I'm picking out of the second, first and second, and then someone
that you play in a best ball format that includes defense is as lame as a non PPR league, but I'm sweeping that aside.
Yeah.
So I like to have three because I've had a lot of issues with injuries to the tight end position, and I do like to have that buffer in case my other two get hurt, which I did just do a lot. I'm actually going to throw out two names, but one guy I've been taking at the end of those leagues is Jason Witten. He's always there. He's always available.
Yeah.
He's coming out of retirement, and we know what Jason Witten is going to bring. He's going to be a possession guy who's going to catch probably seven or eight touchdowns. Not wildly different. I would say a slightly better version, significantly. What I'm expecting is a significantly better version of what Antonio Gates was last season.
Witten was never really a touchdown catcher. He was more of a receptions and yards type of player. But maybe he comes back and that is his role. They bring him in as a tough red zone. If I'm asking you for a sleeper,
I don't like to call him a sleeper. He's more of a guy that I will take with my last pick in best ball leagues, just because I feel like at the very least he's going to be out there putting up a few points every day. I don't want zeros. I just want one guy in best ball. A lot of your opponents will just be getting zeros at certain positions on certain weeks because they've drafted teams in such a way that they didn't protect themselves enough against injury, or just they happened to be unlucky. But that just happens. As I look through all of my old best ball leagues, six or seven of the teams are just getting zeros all over the place by week 13, 14. Go back and look. If you use draft, you can see your leagues from previous years. And if you go back and look at those leagues and just click through the teams, you'll see that the winning teams, the top four or five, they're getting points ideally at every position, even in the final week of the season. But the teams that like are at the bottom six or seven, if you check them, they're all getting zeros at positions by the last week. You can't drop people, and they just, so I don't mind throwing a guy like that who I think will probably deliver six or seven fantasy points, like relatively consistently. And occasionally if he scores a touchdown, cool. Another name, I want to get your opinion on this guy. always hurt, completely unreliable, but very, very good when he's played, and that's Tyler Eifert.
Yeah, sure. I think that Tyler Eifert is not a player I would recommend to anyone to draft in your season-long league, but I can guarantee you he will be a player that is on our waiver wire report more than once this season.
Well, don't guarantee it. He could Cincinnati be hurt in the first game. Like, he's known for that.
Yeah, no, I'm when I say guarantee, it's a guarantee in quotes, okay? So what Cincinnati did was something smart. What they did was they drafted a tight end in the second round. His name is Drew Sample, and Drew Sample is known for his blocking. And what that's going to do is that's going to allow Tyler Eifert to just focus on running routes. And many of the Eifert injuries came from when he was blocking in the line. He's just not a skilled blocker. He is a pass catcher, and I think the team wised up. So Tyler Eifert is going, his snap count is going to go down this year, obviously, and he is going to be in mostly on passing situations. So I think Tyler Eifert will be a streaming option at tight end. I like the pick, certainly more upside than Jason Witten. And Eifert is still at a reasonable age. I don't think he's 30 yet. And again,
he's 28 years old.
He won't be called.
Has all the size.
Yeah, so he won't.
He's a first round draft pick. He is, outside of his just consistent injuries, the guy is prototypical.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it is. That's what it is. So yeah, I agree with that one. Those are good picks for the, but I think again, those guys will be for best ball, great last pick, certainly a lot of upside. Okay. A couple of the ones that I'm looking at, if we're talking about players that probably will pop up on your waiver wire, or if you're in a best ball situation, good last picks is, I mean, Gronk retired, right? So New England's probably going to throw to the tight end. They can't just throw every pass to Julian Edelman. And we don't know if Josh Gordon's going to be there. The rookie they drafted in the first round, N'Keal Harry, the wide receiver, still a rookie. So how about Matt Lacoste as maybe having some value in stretches, in 2 or 3 week stretches? Coming over from Denver, I believe it was, you know, I trust the Bill Belichick to bring in players that he thinks will fit the system. Any interest in a Matt Lacoste at some point in the season? Can you see him being valuable?
Yeah, I mean, he's draftable, right? It's a complete mystery. It's a complete speculation with Matt Lacoste. It's just a speculation with him because we don't have a clue. I'm trying to look up his stats. His career stats to see if he's shown anything.
But his career stats to me, it's almost moot. He's playing with Tom Brady. There's no Gronk. Bill Belichick brings him in, and we'll get a quick reveal. I mean, in week one, if he has zero targets, and in week, you know, I mean, we know to drop him. But what if he gets 5 or 4 or 6 targets in week one and scores a touchdown? I mean, if he has 4 catches for 38 yards and a touchdown, aren't you picking him up?
I mean, I don't mind throwing him on your bench. I'm not going to come out here and say I expect Lacoste to have a great season. I have taken him in some best ball leagues as well, just because, again, it's that last pick. I'm always trying to get that third tight end. And it's like he's one of those names that's there along with Witten and a few of these others. And I'm just kind of looking for somebody who's going to do anything, be on the field, and have any chance of giving me any life. But I will say this.
And you.
I'm going to say this about the Patriots. There was this assumption last season when Gronk would get hurt that, oh, Dwayne Allen, who they had as the sort of other tight end on the team, would now step up and start getting reception. And that just didn't happen. They're not going to throw. The Patriots will find a way to throw to talented players. They will throw it to James White. They'll find somebody else to throw to. They're not going to force it to Lacoste because he's a tight end and they feel like they need to throw to the tight end position. So that is just not the Patriot way.
The other guy for redraft for 2019 that nobody is talking about, I mean, like, I literally do not hear one person talking about this player, had some hype coming into last year, is Trey Burton. This is the second year in that system. Okay. Generally, when you go to a new team, it takes a year to get acclimated. We loved Trey Burton because every time Zach Ertz was out when he was on Philly, he produced. So coming into year two, second year, Matt Nagy's system, they paid him, you know, contract the year before. He's going around tight end 11, but he's just getting no hype. Is that somebody that you have any interest in whatsoever?
He falls in that range. I mean, I think he's fine where he's going. I think, you know, if a lot of it, again, I talked about recency bias with some of these other guys, and like the Jimmy Graham as well. And the recency bias issue is this. Last season, this happens a lot across a lot of things, different sports. It really does. We have this bad sense about Trey Burton. Why? Because Trey Burton was jacked up to like TE5 or 6 last season. Okay, everybody was excited.
Yeah,
about
he didn't produce.
No, but I mean, in your draft, we were talking about Trey Burton. We were ranking him higher. It was a speculation play.
For good reason.
He looked like great. He looked great on the Eagles, and he was going to this team that didn't have another real tight end option. And you know, he has athleticism. There's no reason he got paid well. So all of the reasoning that was in place last season for Trey Burton, why we were probably excited about him. Those things are still in place. Can he improve? Absolutely. Do I mind him as TE12, TE13? You know, if I'm forced to, not at all.
Well, Trey Burton or Chris Herndon, who do you like better? Given the suspension and the
it's
early bye.
Really tough. I'm gonna rank Trey Burton ahead of Chris Herndon. Trey Burton is
right for the reasons we outlined.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple reasons for it. He's also a touchdown scorer. The Bears do run a particular play to Trey Burton down at the goal line, and they run it consistently. Most of Trey Burton's touchdowns last season, it's a little toss to the tight end where it's almost like a running play where they'll just.
I mean, like a shuffle.
It's
like
a shuffle pass. I say he scored 6 touchdowns last season. I'm going to say at least 4 of them, and maybe all 6. Were scored on that same shovel pass play from about the 2 or 3 yard line. So the fact that they do that and they love running that play and it was very successful last year, right? And that's how most of his touchdowns were scored. If they could just include him in the actual passing game a little bit, then you could take what he did last year in those 6 touchdowns and you could just get a little more production out of him just in like normal tight end receptions and yardage type situations. He could turn into a top 6 or 7 score producing player at the position. So Trey Burton has the upside. They just have to throw it to him. And again, I do like the shovel pass play that they have, and they run it frequently enough that you can kind of expect you'll see those this year. When you watch the Bears this season, watch for that shovel pass. He will score more than 1 touchdown on that play. And it's like a stolen. It's like a stolen touch. It's almost like a vulture touchdown. You know what I mean? You're expecting the running back to get. All of a sudden, Trey Burton comes in and steals the touchdown.
Hey, look, that's why they brought him in. So, and then the last question I'll ask you before we wrap it up is because we do have dynasty players. I do get dynasty questions from your subscribers. You know, dynasty is becoming a format that is becoming more interesting to the mainstream, and people are sort of tinkering around with it. Do you have, outside of Noah Fant and Hockenson, because we know those two are the first round draft picks, who's the tight end you like the most out of the rest of the group that you think may not necessarily have value this year, but if you're looking at a tight end on the normal trajectory of a 2 to 3 year you're holding a tight end before they produce, which one do you like the best outside of Hockenson and Fant?
I like Sternberger mainly because situation. Draft
Sternberger
yes,
on Green Bay.
Draft
on
equity. Situation. Packers. Good offense. A good scoring offense to be on. And I think you can consider, again, and these are not like controversial or anything, but you know, an Irv Smith.
I just asked the one that you like. You know, I mean, you know.
What about you?
Yeah. I've said it early on. I'm gonna stay with it. I think Josh Oliver on Jacksonville, he's looked really good. He's the most interesting to me. I'm trying to get him where I can. I think that it's wide open. There's no dominant number one wide receiver in Jacksonville. Like, people are drafting D.D. Westbrook as if he's going to be the number one. And then, but there's just a whole smorgasbord worth of wide receivers there. Nobody is guaranteed anything. I think the opportunity is best there, and he's looked good. And he's an athletic tight end that I think has the best chance to produce outside of those
top two
tight ends.
Do you think Oliver can produce this season?
I mean, look, Nick Foles, his favorite target was the tight end, right? He threw to Zach Ertz. And if Josh Oliver proves worthy and gets open, and I don't think they're going to be asking him to block too much. I don't see why he can't. He's a guy that I'm keeping an eye on. And in, you know, your third round of your rookie draft, and maybe even at the end of the second, if you don't like the options on the board, I think that he has a chance to be useful. I don't ever expect too much out of a rookie tight end, but he's the one that I wouldn't mind holding on to. Third round of your rookie draft, hold him for a couple of years. I think we could be talking about him and it pretty sooner rather than later as a top 12 option for tight end.
Mark it down. You heard it here for your dynasty leagues. Now, speaking of dynasty leagues, I understand that as part of the DFS Army Draft Kit, you're going to be putting out some dynasty rookie rankings.
Yeah. So in addition to our season long rankings, I'm also doing a top 36, the first three rounds of your rookie draft. I might even go a little deeper. Some rookie drafts are five rounds, so I could maybe put out the top five rounds, but I'm definitely going to be posting my top 36 in the order that I believe they should go off the board. Now, obviously you can, you know, based on what position you need, and this is for one QB format, I'll also do a super flex ranking as well, because that changes things. So yes, I will be putting out at least the top 36 in dynasty rookie and super flex.
I love it. I'm excited to see it. And, you know, let's wrap it up right here. We'll
yeah,
call it a tight end. You know, that's as in-depth of a tight end breakdown as you're ever going to hear, you know.
And my nipples are still hard. They haven't gone down.
Some tight ends like no one else. So, guys, for DFS Army, I want to first thank you, Season Long Says, for coming on the show, doing it, sharing all that knowledge. It's awesome. And DFS Army members, listeners, people out there, the public, as I sit here, it's July 11th. We're still early in the sort of lead up to draft season. It's just starting. People are just starting to get the taste for things now. Most people are going to be doing their drafts. Would you say mid August is usually the depth of draft season. Look out in the next week or so for the full blast DFS Army draft kit, which will automatically adjust rankings, ADP data. All of that stuff will continuously be adjusted. Our rankings will be adjusted. You'll get season-long says full-blast rankings. You'll get my rankings. Every player, just about every player in the rankings, has notes next to them, our own custom notes that we make specific to these players. We're going to help you guys dominate your season-long drafts this year. Simple as that. Why not? Let's crush some season-long football.
And if you have questions about any of our rankings or disagree with them, you can tweet at me. Some of your subscribers and your listeners take that liberty they're harsh, but we're putting our opinions out there. So I expect it to have some harsh criticism, but just know we have thick skin. We love good debates, healthy debates, and we look forward to your feedback on any of the content that we put out.
Thanks again, my man. And we will be back next time with more Bold Calls on the DFS Army Bold Calls podcast. Thanks, everyone.